Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
The world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, Valley sports fans. Welcome, everybody, to one of my favorite days on the calendar, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. If you do not have your vibe right today, that is on you.
Yeah.
Kind of?
It depends. I mean, there's extenuating circumstances. There's individual calendars. I get it. Stuff goes on. Mm-hmm. But for generally speaking,
yeah.
This is kind of a last day of school feel.
Very much.
Get back to us when the sun rises. We'll tell you about our vibe.
I told you off the air. I was like, short work week. We were all looking forward to it. You know, you recharge the batteries, have some family time, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And knowing you had one show to get through, I was like, man, it's tough to get out of bed this morning.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Well, listen, totally. the thing about this day and the thing about Thanksgiving to me that makes this day so great is that there's really no responsibilities on Thanksgiving if you are lucky. You're different. You're traveling all over. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking
about
people.
And if you're not cooking.
If you're a parent, you have kids. Christmas is a lot of work.
It is.
A lot of work.
It is.
Boy, this sounds like somebody who does not take part in cooking the Thanksgiving dinner.
That is a lot of work for the people involved in that. And as I told you, I woke up this morning to the smell of my wife's latkes. Jared Carlin.
Well, this is
potatoes.
My wife fried
potatoes and onions.
Yes.
Thick.
You woke up to that smell? Did she make them at midnight?
She did. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. While I was sleeping.
Midnight latkes. Great name for a band.
That is a good one. Well, see, this is
good. Midnight latkes.
To the responsibility point, the biggest thing I have to do is I got to go pick up the pies that I ordered today.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm the wine and beer gal. That's
it. If you're doing Thanksgiving right, that's the deal.
I got to make a non-dairy, gluten-free green bean casserole.
Oh, that sounds wrong on every level.
Delish.
What is that, beans and water?
Yeah, so I got to figure that one out by tomorrow.
Wow.
Watery
beans. Good luck with that, Jarrett.
Thank you.
That's like a rough assignment to make that taste good.
That is the thing I usually make.
Oh,
but
okay.
This year, I'm dealing both with kosher relatives and gluten-free food relatives concerns. And non-dairy, you know, lactose intolerant.
It's better to
go with the non-relatives.
I have a great recipe for you, for that, Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
Just green beans. There's no other ingredients.
Yeah.
No,
that checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. So this is going to be a good day. Start the show, Jarrett.
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yep, November 24th, Wednesday, prior to Thanksgiving, the Arizona Cardinals normally would be back out on the practice field starting today, getting ready for a game on Sunday. That's not the case, as they have their Week 12 bye. They did finally make it official roster-wise yesterday. They cut Chris Streveler, their quarterback, and signed Trace McSorley as their new third-string quarterback to the active roster off of Baltimore's practice squad. So that finally done. Not that it was in doubt. It just, the reports came out so far before it actually became official. And we'll see again. We kind of speculated on the reasons for that. Don't know the reasons for it. I guess we will find out as
time
goes on.
Yeah, we're going to find out. And it's early next week when practice resumes and injury lists come out. That's going to be an interesting pivot point for this team. The hope is this weekend is going to clean up a lot of that stuff.
Yes. The New York Giants have fired offensive coordinator Jason Garrett after just 26 games on the job. Giants are 3-7. They rank 30th in points per game, 31st in yards per game, and third down conversion rate. Freddie Kitchens taking over play calling duties for the Giants, who play Philadelphia on Sunday. Tennessee Titans still struggling to replicate Derrick Henry's production in the running game, and there's a reason for that. He's real good. They'll try to get it figured out without Adrian Peterson. They cut the veteran back on Tuesday after he played in three games with the Titans. Peterson had 82 yards and a touchdown run on 27 carries in those three games.
Okay.
So again, speculate maybe that means Derrick Henry is closer to coming back.
I don't know. Or Adrian Peterson just doesn't have any game left.
Maybe. That could be it, too. Suns looking for number 14 in a row as they visit the Cleveland Cavaliers in game two of a four-game road trip. Suns took the first meeting between the teams 101-92 in Phoenix back on October 30th. That was the win that started this win streak. Couple of key players out for Cleveland. Rookie big man Evan Mobley has an elbow sprain. Point guard Colin Sexton out for the year after undergoing knee surgery. They'll get underway at 5 o'clock in Cleveland. Pre-game coverage with John Bloom and Tim Kempton begins at 4:30 on ESPN, 620 AM and 98.7 FM HD2.
Yeah, going for 14 in a row, Vinny. Imagine that. And look, making it look alarmingly easy.
When you have the back-to-backs at the end of this road trip with Brooklyn and New York, you kind of tend to think, okay, that's a tough gauntlet on back-to-back nights. This seems like a game this team should be able to handle.
Yes.
But again, everything's magnified when you got a streak intact.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And a target on your back.
Yes. LeBron James served his one-game suspension as the Lakers visited the Knicks. And the Knicks hung on to beat L.A. 106-100 at Madison Square Garden. Evan Fournier led New York with 26 points. The Lakers now 9-10.
Don't you love it? Season. 10th loss of the season for the Lakers. That's just beautiful.
I'm thinking maybe I should have put them in that Seahawks-Spurs poll.
Yeah.
Team that sucks now.
Now that's the one that gets the vote.
Yeah, but
the Lakers.
If it was further along in the season.
Yeah. Of course.
You don't
want to
tempt fate with that.
I think we all think that. The Lakers aren't going to
they're gonna get
miss
better.
The playoffs, but...
Yeah. The New York Post headline on their website read something like, Knicks get by Lakers with some help from Carmelo Anthony.
No, that's funny.
He got a standing ovation, but then he went 3-14, so he did help the Knicks win that game. Coyotes looking to extend their point streak to 5 straight games tonight. They host the Edmonton Oilers at Gila River Arena. Oilers come in with 26 points, one of the top teams in the league, and they're led by Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, who Shane Doan was raving about yesterday.
Yeah, fireworks show, Vinny.
Top two point scorers in the league right now. Faceoff is at 8 o'clock. You can hear that here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. ASU basketball in action for 3 straight days, starting tonight in the Bahamas. The 2-2 Devils take on defending national champion Baylor. The Bears off to a 4-0 start. They're ranked number 6 in the country. This is all part of the Battle for Atlantis, which is amazing. A lot of people don't know this. You win that tournament, you get the whole resort.
What?
For a full year.
That's pretty sweet.
That would be a great prize.
Sun Devils will take on either Syracuse.
That's much better than the one U of A was in. You know what the sponsor there was?
Yeah. Get up for that game.
It was.
That's what it was called, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
No.
Sun Devils will take on either Syracuse or Sarah Cazell. Just a gem. Sun Devils will take on either Syracuse or VCU on Thanksgiving and also play either Michigan State, Loyola of Chicago, Auburn, or Connecticut on Friday. Tonight's game gets underway at 5:30. That'll be over on KTAR News 92.3 FM. And, of course, the Sun Devils, as Bobby Hurley told us yesterday, will be without Marcus Bagley for the whole tournament. He didn't even go to the Bahamas. GCU in action tonight hosting Life Pacific. Kind of sounds like a television show, doesn't it?
I was going to say, it sounds like an insurance company.
Dun, dun, dun,
that game
dun,
tips
dun.
At 6. I mean, they played Wyoming the other night. Now Life Pacific. I looked up their mascot, and now I forget what it even was.
It's a whale.
It has to be a whale.
It's got
to
be a whale.
It's got to be a breaching whale.
I think it's the Warriors, actually. They're from San Dimas.
San Dimas football rules!
Yeah. The city that Bill and Ted made famous.
Wow.
Top two teams in the country got together last night in Las Vegas. Top-ranked Gonzaga cruised over number two, UCLA, 83-63.
Not to jump in yet, but that, wow.
Chet.
And UCLA had it rolling. That game was not even close from the get-gate.
Yeah. They got a good team, Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of revenge for that.
Yeah, that freshman, that guy they got is
Chet?
Yep, he's great.
Oh, wait, no, Gonzaga won that game. I was thinking revenge in the Final Four.
Yeah, no.
Yes, barely got past him.
Yeah. Much more decisive this time. College football playoff rankings out. And once again, Georgia number one, but there was movement in the top four spots after pasting Michigan State. Ohio State jumped over Alabama to number two, the Crimson Tide number three. And Cincinnati moves into the fourth spot, becoming the first non-Power 5 team ever to hold one of the top four spots during the voting. Can they hang on is the question.
Yes.
It's easy for the committee to put Cincinnati in with two more rankings to come out, but can they be there at the end?
Yeah, this is going to be such a test of their mettle. It really is.
It is.
Because the pressure on them, it's going to be insane.
And the Tampa Bay Rays reportedly giving Wander Franco a 12-year deal with an option worth a potential $223 million.
Wow.
The 20-year-old shortstop finished third in the American League Rookie of the Year voting. He did not spend the full year with the Rays. So this breaks all kinds of records for size of contract for somebody with that little service time in Major League Baseball. In 2019, Ronald Acuna Jr., people were marveling at the fact that he got $100 million from the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
This is more than double that.
And they're saying that he took way less money than he could have gotten just for the years.
He's the real deal. I mean, he was the number one prospect for a long time, but that's still, there's an element of risk, especially for a team like Tampa. Tamper. There you go. There's your splash. For Wednesday, November 24th, coming up next, the Cardinals putting their feet up, watching football this Thanksgiving and not worrying about work. We'll get into some Cardinals news next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Marotta. Bickley and Marotta Mornings.
Man, it's been huge for us, man. It was a good test for our team, you know. Just seeing how we will respond to adversity, going out there and not having those such huge pieces. You know, those are not like, you know, role players. Those are cornerstones of our team that we've been missing, and being able to still out there and go get it done. And that was huge confidence booster for our team across the board, knowing that we still were a capable team, being able to pull it together and get these wins.
It's DJ Humphreys, left tackle for the Arizona Cardinals, talking about what a lot of the league is talking about right now as the Cardinals head into their bye week in Week 12, the fact that they are 9-2, all alone with the best record in the NFL, atop the NFC West with the week off, but the fact that they just not only survived, but thrived in three games without their starting quarterback and top wide receiver in Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. That's a big storyline going into this week, even though the Cardinals aren't playing a game.
It really is. And so to me, it's the Cardinals, what they have done up to this point has been best case scenario. Now, what happens going forward? Will they be something near full strength when they resume? Will they be as hungry coming out of Thanksgiving as they were going into it?
If they're anything like me, no.
Well, that is true, and that's why I use the metaphor, because I really do think that there's this halo of achievement around this football team, this head coach, this general manager, all of this stuff, and it's a real glow right now, and we've got six regular season games left. It's a little premature for that, but that's also part because of how they've gotten here. The losses they've sustained to get here, the Colt McCoy story, everything feels so sturdy, and the team feels so connected. So it does feel like this should be celebrated, and we are, and I think we have been. But they've got to come out of this and go get something bigger.
And here's the other thing about the timing of this bye is it's happening in the week where the Packers play the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to come. They could come out of this week playing and have a two-game lead over the Rams with the tiebreaker. So essentially a three-game.
This is a great weekend to sit back and watch and cheer for carnage. Tampa has got a very difficult game. Mm-hmm. They're playing the Colts. You think they're going to win that game? I'm not betting on it. I'm not betting on anything, but...
But if you did bet, you would avoid that one.
I'd bet on Jay Crowder making the first basket of the game for the Suns.
Boom.
All right, I'm not going there.
From the corner.
All right. Then you mentioned the 49ers. They're playing the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So this resurgence of the 49ers now has to intersect with the resurgence of the Vikings.
How about the Rams?
And then you've got the Rams.
Going to Green Bay.
They have to go play the Packers.
Right. If the Rams lose that game, the Cardinals will come out of the weekend essentially with, what, a three-game lead in the division?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Wow.
Now, here's the other thing, too, because, you know, we've talked about the benefits of getting the number one seed, and Vinny's got some good stuff on that coming up. If the playoffs were to start today, it would not. It may not work out well for the Cardinals, because I believe, well, they would be the one would be in the same bracket as the 4 and the 5. Is that right? Yeah, because the 2 and the 3 would be below them. So the Cardinals would get the winner of the 4 versus 5. So what you're talking about is you're talking about the worst division winner and the best wild card team. As of right this second, if the playoffs began today, that would be playing the Cowboys or the Rams. That would be a tough game.
It would, but you also have to consider that, you know, a 4 seed and a 5 seed, as good as those two teams can be, when you're sitting back and you're watching that first weekend of the playoffs, and that's what the Cardinals are hoping for,
yeah,
you hope for a matchup like that. When really good football teams just wearing each other out they take a visit to Glendale. That's, now, there's a lot that has to happen before we get there.
Of course.
Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator of the Cardinals, also spoke yesterday. Talked about that same thing on the feeling of going 2-1 without a lot of your key players.
Well, that's huge, you know. Not having your quarterback for 3 weeks and winning 2 out of 3, especially divisional games, that's huge for your team. Most teams lose their quarterback and they probably lose all 3, you know. So for us to win 2 out of 3, especially those guys, those games in division, that's huge for our team. And obviously Hop's a big part of our team also. He's one of our better players, you know, and to win in this league, having your best players available is always important. But to win 2 out of 3, that's huge for our team, and it gives your entire team confidence that if you do lose your quarterback in the playoffs, you know, or late in the year, you have a guy who can win for you. So obviously that's awesome, Colton.
Yeah, and again, we've talked a lot, and we've been forced to talk about it because it's been a storyline for the Cardinals, this whole thinking of next man up, mm-hmm. which it's not a Cardinals thing. It exists in 32 locker rooms around the NFL. As long as there's belief behind it, the Cardinals' belief is that they can withstand anything. And when you plug in a backup quarterback and he wins 2 division games on the road and puts up really good numbers while doing it, I can't even, you know, and people might quibble with this, I can't say that what Colt McCoy did was babysitting the offense. They didn't take a lot of chances offensively, but the numbers he put up were outstanding.
He didn't have like 140 yards on 8 completions.
And again, this came up earlier, and you mentioned this in a column on ArizonaSports.com earlier this week. Go look at what the Chicago Bears did in 85 with Steve Fuller at quarterback. They relied on their defense and their running game. His numbers were historically bad.
He was dreadful.
He had like one pick or one touchdown pass in 5 games and 5 interceptions. So Colt McCoy took the offense, and yeah, I think they tempered it a little bit, but they tailored it to what he was good at in those 2 games, and it was something to watch.
The other famous example, I went back and checked this out because I didn't remember it this clearly at all. The Earl Morrill 1972 unbeaten Miami Dolphins team. Bob Greasy, I think, broke his ankle that year. Earl Morrill played 9 games. For an unbeaten football team. So the sport's only unbeaten Super Bowl champion was quarterbacked more often by their backup than the regular quarterback. And that team was the gold standard among the NFL. That's how good they were outside the quarterback position.
But in those games that he played, Earl Morrill never completed more than 12 passes in a game.
Well, when you have Larry Zonka, Jim Kick, Marcus Morris, you don't have to throw the football.
His numbers weren't horrible, but it was a very run.
When you're running behind Bob Kuchenberg, Leonard Little.
And again, we have to admit, it was way tougher for quarterbacks back in that era.
That is
because
true.
Defenders were actually allowed to play defense.
They were tougher, too. They'd like smoke on the sidelines. You see pictures of those old-timey quarterbacks?
Oh, yeah.
They're firing up smokes on the sidelines.
Len Dawson sitting in the locker room at the Super Bowl at halftime smoking a cigarette.
Wow.
Tough.
I don't know that made them
tough. What a sport. What a mythology the sport has.
And just think of it, too, from our selfish standpoint, Vic. Mm-hmm. We don't have to spend Thursday and Friday talking about a week in the NFL that doesn't include the Cardinals.
No, that's true. That's a good point.
This bye week, I don't care what anybody, I don't care what Jordan Hicks says.
Yeah.
This bye week is coming at the perfect time.
Yeah.
Think of how happy the players must be to be able to spend Thanksgiving with their families and not worry about it. That's like among the cavalcade, I don't know if that's the right word, the litany of terrible things about playing for the Lions. Every year you know you have to play on Thanksgiving.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is very true.
Listen, I've thought about that a lot because you would think that's one of the downsides of being a professional athlete is that you're working on holidays. You just are. And your family has to deal with that. And you wonder how that plays out. Because to people who are not in the spotlight, you know, that's almost inviolate. That's the time you just aren't going to give up. You're with your family. But if you're a professional athlete, you're also doing something on a platform where millions of people are watching you, so you don't feel like you necessarily are missing something.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel the guilt of missing it with your family because you're providing such a great life that pro athletes get, right?
Well, I had the worst of both worlds for many years because I had to work in here for the games when the Suns would play on Christmas, when the Cardinals would play on Thanksgiving, when the Diamondbacks would play on 4th of July. Halloween,
but
New Year's Eve.
Look where your work ethic got you.
Oh, man.
All the way to the middle.
Worked my way to the middle.
Right.
But you did it all on your own, Jared.
That must have been depressing. Nothing, though, is more depressing than how Vinny spent his last Thanksgiving, the pandemic Thanksgiving. I almost cried on air when you told that story.
What? It wasn't that bad.
You were driving around looking for food, and everything was closed.
I mean, that was
pretty
bad.
Isn't that a sad scene?
It's
pretty
sad. But I ended up making, like, a complete, like, 8-year-old on his own kind of Thanksgiving meal. I played video games.
Okay.
I played like NHL 94 retro.
I'm seeing the montage now. Yeah. A little mac and cheese.
Right.
A little video game.
Never mind that I got done playing video games and got my noose out, but you know, I didn't go down there.
Jeez Louise.
No.
I'm just trying to play a Bick.
Wow.
Bick said it was the most, he almost cried for
Goodness
me.
Gracious.
We got it, Willie.
I'm joking. And don't call me Willie.
Got it, Willie.
Phoenix Suns hoping to continue their win streak tonight in the city where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. We'll get into some Suns talk next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's off limits, but honestly, man, we just look at it game by game. We just worry about the next day. Never can't look too far ahead. We just take it one game at a time. Just like tomorrow, we got Cleveland, and we're just going to figure that game out and move on to the next one. It's all about just win one game at a time. And then whatever happens, what comes with it, comes with it. Just like the playoffs.
Yeah.
You got to win one game at a time in order to win the whole thing.
Cameron Payne of the Phoenix Suns on with Burns and Gambo yesterday when asked, hey, do you guys talk about this win streak? And the answer is out there publicly. No, they don't talk about it. They do have a one game at a time approach that has served them very well throughout all of it. But I think...
That's a novel approach. I've never heard that before. Team's got a one game...
How did that work out for you in Mock My World, by the way? Using that as a cliche.
Yeah. All right.
Of course, that is what is said.
Right.
And it might not be talked about. But internally, with the guys involved, coaching staff, players, human nature as you start to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I played on a slow-pitch co-ed softball team. We won 38 games in a row at one point.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's hard not to think. You show up on Sunday to play your game. You're like, wow, we haven't lost in a really long. You start to think about it. It's impossible for it not to creep into some capacity.
Yeah,
and I'm not comparing myself to a professional.
This is exactly
athlete.
The same. Yeah.
I'm just talking about the human nature aspect.
There's no keg at half court in these games.
Well, look. Here's what I think about this. I think the Suns, throughout this winning streak, I keep mentioning the fact that they're not performing anywhere near their ceiling, and I think that's for the most part true. But I think this winning streak has also highlighted how deep they are and how they can get any pocket of performances from a number of guys mm-hmm. that get them through games. And right now, campaign is hot. And the bench is back to doing what it was doing. It was Frank Kaminsky for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
DA now is starting to put some really good, different stuff together. They've done this largely without big numbers from Devin Booker, and certainly why the closing numbers from Chris Paul are great. The overall scoring output from Chris Paul and Devin Booker It's been part of the pie.
Yeah. And Cameron Payne talked about that with Burns and Gambo, too, about, hey, look, we have big names on this team, but that doesn't matter.
We really don't care who gets the credit as long as we get the win. And, you know, a lot of teams don't have that same mindset and culture, but we do. And that, you know, gives confidence to every single player. So some things you think they didn't have, but shoot, man, everyone has so much confidence in each other that, man, they might give you something crazy. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the continuous work and – also, man, just having confidence in your teammates, man, that it brings the most out of you.
Yeah, I wanted to pass this along as well. Not Suns related, but just came across to my attention. Cardinals linebacker Chandler Jones has been named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week after his performance in Sunday's win over the Seattle Seahawks.
All right.
Another weekly award for the Arizona Cardinals. Does that mean Colt McCoy is not winning Offensive Player of the Week? Dang it.
So I wonder if Chandler Jones is going to stick with those cleats that he busted out of mothballs.
Oh, yeah.
That story was great, by the way, when he shared that.
Uh-huh.
Did you see Mark Dalton's retweet of that?
Uh-uh. I did not.
It was all in good fun, but he said, why don't you dust off the cleats from the Tennessee game?
Yeah, the 5-sack game.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Anyway, going back to getting credit, getting notoriety for the Phoenix Suns. It came up, Mikal Bridges was a guest of J.J. Redick, the Old Man and the Three podcast. Get it? And here's the way, there's some salty language that has been edited for the listener's sake, but this was Mikal Bridges on the message that I think he's putting forth for the entire team on that subject.
With the way the season ended, do you feel like you're being overlooked as a contender in the West this year?
I guess so. I really don't care about that. That's who are the people that's overlooking us? What is it?
Well, I can tell you this.
Is it reporters?
I can tell you this. I spent about 7 hours at ESPN today, and I don't know that the Suns were brought up in any of my 5 appearances.
If ESPN, Fox Sports, whatever, NBA TV, if the are they the ones lacing up? Are they playing against us? Then I don't give a damn what they think. If they want to come on that court and play against us, then they'd be more than welcome to step on that court with us. But I don't give a damn what people say about me, what I deserve or what ranking it should be. Like, that don't be nothing. Like, if I'm ranked 90, ranked 80, like, I'm going to walk on the court like, hey, man, make sure when you guard me tonight, hey, I'm ranked 87 on ESPN. Just know that. The dude's like, oh, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what the hell are they going to do for me?
It's a very healthy perspective.
It is. But it's something that this team has dealt with. We went through it in real time when the Suns made it to the finals. And the perception locally was from a lot of fans was, wow, ESPN is now forced to talk about the Phoenix Suns because they're one of two teams standing. They have no choice at this point.
Right.
You reel off 13 wins in a row at the beginning of the season, following up a trip to the finals. And, you know, historically, teams that start out that hot, that reach the finals, they get back there again. It's been proven. It's been a graphic on ESPN. So I get the frustration, but I also think it's a very healthy thing for the Suns to know that they have belief in what they're doing and also still a very healthy amount of doubters out there that can fuel you.
It really is a win-win for everybody except sports fans in the Valley that take that stuff personally.
True.
Sports fans in the Valley that do not think the rest of the world can see what we're feeling so prideful about. Right? And I've said there's a disconnect here because what they're doing by not talking about the Phoenix Suns, they are just saying there's not a big enough audience in Phoenix where we're going to even care about this team.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're saying. They're not disrespecting the Suns. They are making a business decision based on where their biggest markets are.
And that's fair, but it's hard not to feel disrespected, and it's hard to not feel like, oh, it's just in your head, when the same thing is happening with the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's almost exact parallel to last season with the Suns and the current season with the Suns.
Yeah. Yeah, listen.
You're right, though. It's got to be the market.
That's exactly what it is.
Or not even the market. It's got to be the size of the fan base.
There is a reason why the hot take shows harp about the Cleveland Browns and the Dallas Cowboys and the Chicago Bears and
The New York teams.
It's demographics. That's what it is. The New York football Giants, I'm glad you brought them up. They were just on a primetime game, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are seven teams in the NFL that have more than double the amount of touchdowns that the Giants have scored since 2020. So in 2 years running, seven teams in the NFL have doubled the amount of touchdowns produced by the Giants offense. What in the world would make anybody think they would be a good primetime television football team?
That's insensitive. Jason Garrett's like, hey, come on, man. I just
got
fired.
Yeah, right. I just got fired, man.
Now you're bringing up that stat?
Yeah, right, right. So, talk about not being mentioned. One of the things that occurred to me is that the name Dario Saric never comes up anymore. Because this basketball team is so much different with JaVale McGee because they don't have, they're not undersized up front anymore.
No, and it's a different set of ingredients.
Yeah.
There's rim protection.
Yes.
And not to say that Dario doesn't play hard, it's just a completely different game. JaVale McGee plays above the rim, Dario Saric plays below the rim, and he was good for them, and you'd love to have him in the fold.
And you have to wonder if having JaVale McGee doing that right in front of DeAndre Ayton constantly has helped spur what we've seen from D.A.
Well, D.A. talked about that in terms of what he's learned from Frank Kaminsky, too.
Yeah.
And you know, putting the ball on the floor and being deceptive and, you know, being a playmaker as well. Suns and Cavs tonight, 5 o'clock. You can hear that on ESPN 620 AM starting at 4:30 with the pregame. Coming up next. No Pac-12 South Championship hopes remain for the Arizona State Sun Devils. What is their mindset going into the Territorial Cup game? Heck, what's the Wildcats' mindset? We'll get into all of it next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta.
Dan Bickley and Vince Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
The ball is in the air. DJ Taylor's going to bring it out, and he's up to the 20. He's to the 30. Taylor down the far sideline, and DJ Taylor is going to take the opening kickoff all the way back for an Arizona State touchdown. Taylor fielded the kick about 7 yards deep in the end zone, found an alley along the far sideline, and officially it will go in the books as a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown.
That's the way the Territorial Cup game started last year in an empty Arizona stadium with an opening kickoff return for a touchdown by DJ Taylor.
Typical Vinny, not playing one of the many U of A highlights from that game.
I looked. I mean, I went back into the files. There wasn't many of them. That game got out of hand in a hurry. It remained out of hand. It was a 70-7 win for Arizona State.
63-point triumph.
Yes.
You don't see those very often in rivalry. That might leave a mark.
A lot has changed in the year, 11 months since that game, because that game took place in December. Obviously, U of A's got a new head coach.
Mm-hmm.
The situation around ASU in terms of optimism with their coaching staff has completely evaporated for a number of reasons. On-field performance, lack of discipline, and, oh, by the way, an NCAA investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But has it changed enough to flip the result from such an extreme result from a year ago? I don't know. I mean, U of A is not a good team. They have one win on the year. The team that they beat was Cal, who was missing 22 players because of COVID. They had to cancel their next game because of COVID, or postpone that game because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But I was driving around yesterday. I was listening to Burns and Gambo, and they were talking about it. And Burns, he brought up something that made me think. And he said, when you're trying to handicap bowl games, not the big bowl games, but the lower tier bowl games, you have to consider what team is happier to be there. In picking it, because there's a lot of teams that you would favor on paper that feel like they've been slighted or they're not playing for much, and they get beat. I think in some ways that applies to the game Saturday at Sun Devil Stadium. ASU is clearly the better football team, clearly incredibly flawed as a football team. U of A's coming in with one win on the season, but I get the feeling that they might feel like they've got more to play for than ASU does. Is that enough to make up the
That's the question. I agree with your premise. I really do. I think that I think ASU is very, very vulnerable right now, but I don't know if they're vulnerable to the Wildcats. That's really the big thing, and I think you phrased it perfectly. What's interesting to me about this game, always has been, I moved here in 1998, and in sort of trying to immerse myself in the market, all I heard was how different this rivalry game was, how weird things always happen. And sure enough, the first couple of years, it like happened right in front of my face. There was a year when the Wildcats were 12-1, I believe, nationally ranked, and they barely beat ASU. It was a crazy game,
yep.
High-scoring game. And so ever since then, we've gotten it sort of is like, okay, this is what happens in this game. You really can literally throw the records out the window. I think this rivalry in recent years has gotten extreme. A 63-point win for ASU, a win for Arizona where they don't even throw the football.
In the second half,
In the second half, just extreme sucker punches to the other fan base. Can that happen this year?
Yeah. Well, Jed Fish, the new head coach of ASU or U of A, finally, he's getting his feet wet in this rivalry, and he talked about it this week. And there's a rallying cry around the program based on things that transpired last year.
This is special because of the length of time this trophy has gone on for. The fact that you're talking about the two universities in the state that are Power Five programs. And the fact that, there's a obvious animosity toward one another. And then clearly, when it's 63-7 and you call a pass on 4th-and-4, right, there's something to that. So we remember.
I know the reaction to that. If you're an ASU fan, you're rolling your eyes and you're saying, don't get down by 56 points and you don't have to worry about it.
Well,
if you're a U of A fan, you're saying, damn right, that wasn't sportsmanlike, sportsmanship as a part of this rivalry anyway. You're supposed to turn it on when you're up 56 points, whatever. I get why Jed Fish is hammering that point home, because they were embarrassed on their home field. The only saving grace they have is nobody saw it in person because the stadium was empty. And that's one thing that hasn't changed. Their stadium has been empty all this year as well. But
sellout after sellout at ASU.
Yeah.
But
they had one good crowd.
Here's what I think. I think the best case scenario for U of A is like the Jaguars or Texans game versus the Cardinals. Like maybe ASU overlooks them. Maybe they're not completely up for the game. But the talent is just so different right now between the teams. U of A can't win. They might keep it close like those games. But even if they overlook U of A,
As I try to process everything we have seen from ASU this year, there's a good chance they're going to finish, 8-4 and play just a mid-level kind of Vegas Bowl kind of deal.
Yep.
On paper, that's not bad, but your eyes tell you something completely different. It's the way that they have lost games when you know that they've got better talent than that. The penalties, the lack of focus from this football team is about the worst I've ever seen from a football team, a team that's expected to be good. And for anybody to say that this isn't related to the NCAA investigation, that is just garbage. Because this school and this program has been trying to say from day one, no distractions here, when the football team looks like there's nothing but distractions. This football team at ASU, they've gotten up twice against California schools because a lot of the kids at ASU were recruited from California. That focused them. Now, do the Wildcats focus them? And that's important to me because if ASU focuses, they'll win 42-10 or something like that.
But they haven't focused.
But they have.
The requisite,
right.
They've done it once this year, basically.
Right, yes.
And that was the UCLA game.
The UCLA game. That's exactly right. So I look at this, and so I say, what are you going to get out of this ASU team? Because that, to me, is really going to dictate where this goes. Because there's a pressure on ASU. ASU can't eke out a win against this team and have people feel good about it.
No.
There's going to have to be some style. There's going to have to be some domination, some level of it. There's going to have to be for ASU to get any dignity out of the season at all.
And if they can just get out of their own way, that won't be an issue for them. The talent presented by U of A is not going to be too much for them.
Yeah.
Can't they get out of their own way?
And there's so much to be... How can a football program with a quarterback like Jaden Daniels have no passing game at this stage of the season? How does that happen?
It is alarming to see the lack of production they've had in that area. When you go back and watch Jaden Daniels, who, by the way, outplayed Justin Herbert as a true freshman, Justin Herbert went on to be a high first-round draft pick who's lighting the NFL on fire, it's a mystery, and I know Herm Edwards said it again this week, talking about the youth of that receiving core. They're not that young.
Yeah.
They've got a graduate student in Brian Thompson that they try to force the ball to. He's not young. Ricky Pearsall's in his third year in the program. He's not young. They don't have one true freshman in that whole group.
Yeah, and everybody knows the shoe that's about to drop, because no matter what the NCAA does, even if they do nothing, do you know how bottomed out ASU recruiting is right now?
It is.
It's going to take years to recover
and
from this.
There's a lot of people speculating that you know, the day after that game on Saturday, there might be sweeping changes made in the ASU program.
Yeah, I've got thoughts on that. I'll share this with you right now. I doubt Ray Anderson fires Herm Edwards. The question, if there's any firing going on, it's going to be the school president removing both of them. That's what I think. I think the other scenario is Herm's going to tap out. If Ray Anderson is going to keep his job, and Michael Crow, up until this point, loves Ray Anderson. If he keeps Ray Anderson employed, then Herm is going to tap out. Herm is going to retire.
But there's also this air of defiance in NCAA athletics right now, that when you're under the microscope from the NCAA in terms of investigation, programs have thumbed their nose. Is ASU in that? You know, we don't know what's going on with this investigation right now, but are they of that mindset?
Yeah.
Where they're just going to say, you know, we're not firing
Michael
anybody.
Crow's response to this is going to be very fascinating, because he's a guy that does not want his athletic programs breaking rules, yet he's also extremely loyal to people that he likes. And Ray Anderson, he was extremely loyal to Larry Scott.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Very, very much the case there. Territorial Cup, Saturday, 2 o'clock from Sun Devil Stadium. You can hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up next, through 11 weeks of the NFL season, the Arizona Cardinals are atop the league with a 9-2 record. What does that mean for their Super Bowl chances? We'll look at that from a historical perspective next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.